Usually when we think about trust in technology, there's this really clear boundary, right? It's kind of like being in the cockpit of a plane. You absolutely trust the autopilot to, hold a cruising altitude, manage the throttle, keep things steady.
Exactly. It's a highly capable tool.
Right. But if an engine blows out in a massive storm, you want the human pilot's hands on the yoke. The boundary is super clean, the machine assists, the human commands.
Yeah, that's the traditional model.
But right now, we are stepping into this era where we aren't just handing over the cruising altitude. We're handing over the entire flight deck. We're asking the machine to negotiate with air traffic control, reroute the flight, and handle the emergency landing all by itself.
Which is a terrifying shift.
It really is. And that terrifying shift is exactly what this exclusive, invitation-only group of global researchers, founders, and regulators gathered to figure out in Paris last week.
Yeah, it really is a paradigm-shattering shift.
Yeah.
We're essentially moving away from software that just sits there and waits for our instructions to autonomous entities that act on our behalf. And the source document we're looking at today, which is a Chatham House rule report from the May 4th AI Vision Forum titled Architecting Human-AI Synergy. It's basically a survival guide for what they're calling the agentic era.
The agentic era. I love that term. And the mission for you, listening to this deep dive right now, is to really decode the high-level debate from that room.
Exactly.
Because the overarching theme that just keeps jumping off these pages is a massive psychological and, technical pivot. We're moving away from implicit trust in AI chatbots, where we just kind of assume the text on the screen is a good answer, to re requiring engineered trust in AI agents that actually go out and execute tasks in the real world.
Yeah, engineered trust is the key phrase there.
So, let's unpack this. To understand where AI is going, we first have to understand why the foundational technology stack beneath it has completely worked. And there's this story in the opening keynote about an exponential crunch that I think just sets the stakes perfectly.
Oh, that anecdote. It really grounded the sheer velocity we're dealing with right now.
Yeah.
So the speaker in the keynote shared that back in 1992, he spent about 6 months painstakingly writing the code for a really basic neural network,
Right.
and it barely functioned.
Right. 6 whole months.
Exactly. Fast forward to March 2023, and he feeds the parameters of that old 1992 project into ChatGPT, asking it to rewrite the code. And the AI does it in 10 seconds.
But the code failed initially, right? Like it hallucinated.
It did, yeah. But here's the crucial detail. He fed the error code back into the AI.
Okay.
And in another 10 seconds, the AI diagnosed its own hallucination, rewrote the architecture, and the program ran at 95% accuracy.
Wow.
Yeah, so the speaker was highlighting the compounding force of what they call the double exponential curve. We aren't just dealing with Moore's law anymore.
Which is the rule that hardware gets twice as fast every 2 years, right?
Exactly. We are combining that hardware speed with massive compounding data feedback loops. As he put it to the room, he said, "I've been eating algorithms for breakfast every day for the past 4 years. And I'm telling you, I'm starting to feel the crunch. Something is tearing in the fabric."
Man, something is tearing in the fabric. That is such a visceral way to describe it, the pace of tech right now.
It really is.
And the room's reaction to this was just incredible because the speaker quoted Arthur C. Clarke's famous line, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Right.
But then he completely rejected it. He argued that in software architecture, magic implies deception.
Yeah, exactly.
It implies a black box where you have no idea how a decision was actually made. And the room, they actually chanted together out loud, "I will not be eaten by AI."
It's a very powerful refusal, honestly, to not be passive consumers.
Yeah.
It's a demand for white box, inspectable AI, rather than a magical black box that just feeds you answers.
Yeah.
And that philosophical rejection translates directly into how we have to rebuild the technology stack.
Right.
Because the consensus among the developers in Paris was that open source weights, like the actual trained AI models themselves, your Llamas or your DeepSeeks, they're already becoming commodities. The frontier has officially moved.
Oh, wait, I want to pause here for a second because this feels really counterintuitive.
Okay.
If the models themselves are essentially free and commoditized, why aren't we all running massively powerful super agents on our laptops right now?
That's a fair question.
It feels like someone handed us the secret recipe for the world's best cake, but we suddenly realize, oh, wait, we don't own the oven, the pans, or the kitchen to actually bake it in.
That is a great starting point, but I'd actually take that analogy a step further.
Okay.
It's not just that you don't own the oven. Imagine that OpenRecipe is written in a highly proprietary coded language that only one specific brand of oven can understand.
Oh, wow.
Right. So if you don't buy their exact massively expensive oven, the free recipe is totally useless to you. That is what we call hardware lock-in.
Okay. So the recipe is free, but the translation is trapped.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the report introduces this new framework to explain this called the CLA stack. That's C-L-A-W.
Okay.
Which stands for compute, LLMs, agents, and workflow. Open source has absolutely conquered the LLM layer. But the real battleground, the restrictive oven in your analogy, is the compute layer at the very bottom.
So you're talking about the actual physical microchips and the software that talks to them?
Yes, precisely. Specifically, things like compilers and kernel languages like Triton.
Okay, you're going to have to translate that for me. What on earth is a kernel language?
Sure, yeah. Think of them as the ultimate translators. They take the high-level abstract thought of the AI model and convert it into the physical, microscopic electrical pulses that a specific brand of microchip understands.
Got it.
Historically, chip manufacturers kept those translators fiercely proprietary to lock you into their hardware. But the report cited this massive breakthrough called FlagOS.
FlagOS.
Yeah. It's an initiative where developers took a flagship open-weight AI model and ported it to run efficiently on over 10 completely different AI chipsets in just 2 or 3 days.
Wait, really? 2 or 3 days? That usually takes, like, months of specialized engineering, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. But FlagOS achieved this by creating a unified open-source translator that bypasses the proprietary lock-in. It basically proves that true open compute is possible.
That's huge.
It is. Because without that flexibility, you don't actually have sovereignty over your AI, no matter whose flag is flying over the data center.
Okay, so let's say we get this right. We break the hardware lock-in. We have this open infrastructure. What do we actually build on top of it? Because the forum completely rejected the whole sci-fi movie idea of one giant, omnipotent AI that runs your whole life.
Oh, totally.
Instead, they describe an architecture called Backbone Plus Specialist.
Right. And the logic there is incredibly practical. Think of a corporate environment. You use a strong, generalist, open-weight model as a backbone to orchestrate the workflow, but it doesn't do the heavy lifting itself.
Right. It delegates.
Exactly. It delegates the actual tasks to swarms of tiny, highly specialized, highly efficient models. As one attendee bluntly put it, we don't need to be providing a recipe for carbonara and kibble code in the same way.
I love that. Let the chef model cook. Let the coder model code.
Yeah.
But this brings us to a massive glaring hurdle. Okay, so we build this incredible backbone plus specialist architecture. We have swarms of these specialized agents doing tasks autonomously.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm giving a specialist agent the keys to my corporate bank account or asking it to merge code into my company's main products, how on earth do I trust it not to make a catastrophic error or worse, get hijacked by a hacker?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question right there.
Right.
And it's why the report stresses that we are no longer just managing AI hallucination. We are managing trust.
Right.
Because mathematically, AI agents now outnumber humans exponentially.
Exponentially. Let that sink in for a second. If you're listening to this, autonomous software acting on your behalf vastly outnumbers you.
It's wild to think about.
And the scary part is what the report identifies as the verifiability gap.
Yeah, the verifiability gap is the new, harsh economic reality of the agentic era.
Yeah.
Because thanks to things like FlagOS, the cost of compute, like the cost to actually run the AI, is falling dramatically.
Right.
But the cost of verifying what that AI actually did, what data it touched, and whether it followed your security policy, that cost is skyrocketing. Right now, the report notes a terrifying statistic. Roughly 79% of companies implement AI without actually having visibility into what is happening underneath the hood.
Wait, I'm confused. Can't a company just look at the AI's logs? Well, like if the agent does something, it writes it down in a text file, right? Why is it so hard to just read the logs?
Because logs are just a diary entry written after the fact. And an agent can lie in its diary.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Or a malicious actor can rewrite the diary to cover their tracks. If an agent negotiates a legally binding contract or moves $1 million, a simple editable text log isn't legally or practically binding.
Okay, that makes total sense. So if logs are totally useless, what is the actual mechanism for trust?
The delegates in Paris argued that meaningful oversight requires a deterministic control plane.
Okay, jargon alert. Break down deterministic control plane for us.
Think of it like a cryptographic wax seal on a physical letter.
Okay.
It provides tamper-resistant machine-to-machine evidence at every single point, where data crosses from one system to another. The math guarantees that the data was processed exactly as requested.
Ah, see.
Right. So if the agent deviates from its instructions by even a fraction, or if anyone alters the record after the fact, the mathematical seal shatters. So an auditor doesn't need to read the whole letter or trust a diary entry. They just look to see if the cryptographic seal is intact.
Oh, that is brilliant. So the math proves the trust, not just a promise from the vendor.
Precisely. In fact, they introduced a strict proof of control taxonomy. For an AI action to be considered verifiable, the verifier must be strictly independent of both the operator and the company that built the AI model. Yeah, self-attestation, where a big tech company just says, trust us, our AI behaved properly, is officially dead as a security standard.
And this ties right into a major geopolitical debate right now, doesn't it? Because politicians are obsessed with this buzzword, sovereign AI.
Oh, definitely.
But the report basically throws cold water on that, arguing that simply having a domestic vendor logo or building a data center inside your country's borders does not make an AI sovereign.
No, it really doesn't. The quote from the room was definitive. They said, "We never talk about sovereign AI again without talking about verification in the same sentence."
Right.
Because if you cannot cryptographically prove where your citizens' data went and exactly what hardware processed it, you don't have sovereignty. You just have a marketing slogan wrapped in a flag.
Man. And I imagine this creates a ton of friction with massive regulatory frameworks like the EU AI Act.
It creates an enormous paradox.
Mm-hmm.
The EU AI Act, for instance, forces broad obligations, like demanding a model be highly accurate, while simultaneously demanding strict human oversight and explainability. But technically speaking, those things actively trade off against each other when you're tuning a model's parameters.
Mm.
You simply cannot maximize all of them at once.
So what's the workaround? I mean, you can't just ignore the law.
Well, the consensus was not to try and reopen the legislation, which would take years of bureaucratic nightmares.
Right, totally.
Instead, they suggested moving toward harmonized process and procedure auditing. Basically, instead of trying to regulate the unpredictable runtime behavior of an AI agent trying to solve a complex problem, regulators should focus on auditing that deterministic control plane we just talked about.
Right. Audit the wax seals.
Exactly. Audit the wax seals.
Okay, so let's zoom out for a second. We engineer this verifiable trust into the systems. We build the OpenCL law stack. The machines are secure.
Mm-hmm.
But how do humans actually interact with these verified agents day to day without our own brains, you know, turning to mush?
Yeah, that's the real problem.
Because if you are a manager listening to this right now and you just rolled out a fancy new AI assistant to your team, this next part should absolutely terrify you.
You're referring to the massive crisis in learning and education they debated.
Exactly.
The statistics here are incredibly sobering. They highlighted that approximately 95% of recent enterprise AI pilots failed to deliver long-term value. 95%.
And here's where it gets really interesting. They don't fail because the AI models are dumb, or because the tech doesn't work. They fail because of a complete lack of what the researchers called cognitive design.
Yes.
When a company just buys a generic, off-the-shelf chatbot and hands it to their employees, the system learns, the system gets smarter, but the organization itself enters a cognitive black hole.
Yeah, the employees aren't learning anything new. They're just outsourcing their thinking. The report explicitly labels this the calculator effect.
Calculator effect.
Right. The premise is simple but devastating. Whatever you use a tool for, you are going to get worse in that skill. Chatbots, by their very design, exist to remove friction. You ask a complex question, you get an instant, perfectly formatted answer. But cognitive science has known for a century that deep learning requires friction.
It's exactly like what happened to our sense of direction with GPS.
Oh, that's a perfect example.
Right. 10 years ago, I knew my city like the back of my hand. I had a mental map. Now, if my phone dies, I literally can't find my way out of my own neighborhood.
Thing.
The tool got infinitely better, but my brain got weaker. So default chatbots are basically mental junk food.
Pretty much.
They give you the dopamine hit of an instant answer, but zero nutritional value for your brain.
Are they arguing we actually need to design the friction back in?
That is the exact argument made in the 3 companion research papers released alongside the forum. They examined thousands of years of pedagogical theory, you know, Socrates, Jean Piaget, Richard Feynman.
Mm-hmm. The core of all true human learning is productive struggle, cognitive conflict, and dialogic interaction.
Like the Socratic method, answering a student's question with a harder question to force them to think.
Exactly. Oh. But historically, The Socratic method never scaled across a whole population because it requires a one-to-one relationship with a human teacher who possesses, like, unbounded patience.
Which is impossible to scale.
Right. But AI can finally unblock this constraint. But it requires a massive pivot from a reactive assistant to what the papers call a digital daemon.
A digital daemon.
Yes, a persistent, individualized agent that actually knows the learner. It tracks their cognitive progress, and instead of just spitting out the answer to a coding problem or a math equation, it deliberately introduces calibrated difficulty. It asks the right question at the right time.
It knows exactly how hard to push you before you get frustrated and give up.
Exactly.
That is incredible. But if we don't get this right, if we just stick with the mental junk food chatbots, the consequences for human careers are terrifying.
Oh, absolutely.
The panel talked about a pipeline crisis. Specifically, they noted how software education is rapidly shifting from teaching the how-like, the actual syntax of writing a line of code, to teaching the what writing, the overarching specification for what the code should do.
And the real-world example they cited for this is fascinating. At a Chinese university, students were tasked with rebuilding the massive 12306 national train booking system.
Right.
For context, that system handles billions of ticket requests. It's phenomenally complex. But the students didn't write the code. They rebuilt the entire system purely by writing the specifications and constraints for AI agents, and the agents generated the architecture.
Which sounds like a miracle of efficiency until you look at the dark side of this shift, right? How it completely bifurcates the job market.
Yes.
According to the report, top PhD graduates who understand the deep underlying architecture of these systems are making around 150,000 euros a year right out of the gate. But median graduates, the ones who just learned basic syntax without that deeper cognitive scaffolding, they're finding absolutely zero roles. They are completely priced out of the industry because an agent can do their job instantly.
Which brings us to a massive practical roadblock.
Yeah.
If we're going to build personalized digital daemons for every student on Earth and run vast agentic swarms that write our national infrastructure code, that requires an unbelievable, almost unfathomable amount of compute power.
Which begs the obvious question, who is going to pay for it, and what happens to the human beings who are currently desperately trying to keep the digital world running?
Exactly.
There was a quote from the infrastructure debate, "In the AI coding bureau, code is cheap. Show me the data."
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the fundamental unit of strategic resource in tech has shifted. It is no longer just lines of code. It is tokens.
Tokens.
Yeah, the compute power required to run the models. Yeah. And right now, the humans who maintain the open source infrastructure of the internet, the volunteers keeping our servers secure, they are drowning.
The maintainer burnout.
It's an epidemic. Because compute is getting cheaper, AI bots are suddenly capable of submitting massive volumes of pull requests, you know, code contributions, to open source projects.
Right.
These bots are often well-intentioned, trying to fix bugs, but they lack the deeper context of the project. So they submit flawed code. This avalanche of AI-generated spam is erasing human work and bypassing established community norms.
Man.
The report notes that maintainers are at the very edge of quitting. One was quoted saying, "My blood, sweat, and tears have paid for this to be online, and now they're spending their weekends just doing triage on bot spam."
It's heartbreaking. They built the foundation of the internet, and now they're being crushed by the sheer weight of the AI house being built on top of it.
It really is.
So the proposed solution in the report is this open token model. It's the idea of treating bundled access, meaning the AI model, plus the actual compute tokens required to run it, as a digital public good.
Mm-hmm.
But they mention evaluating it against the UN's DPGA-9 indicators. Alphabet soup alert. What are the DPGA-9 indicators?
So it stands for the Digital Public Goods Alliance. It's a set of 9 baseline international standards ensuring that a technology does no harm, strictly protects user privacy, and is transparently owned.
Okay, but let me push back on this whole free compute idea. Isn't free usually just a slick marketing trick for big tech companies?
Right.
Like, here's some free tokens, get locked into our proprietary oven, and we'll secretly monetize your data later.
The delegates were fiercely clear on this point. They said, in this world, no meal is free. When tokens are just handed out for free by a massive vendor, you're entirely right. It usually monetizes your data, or it encourages massive environmental waste because there's no financial penalty for a user overconsuming server power.
Right.
The open token proposal is absolutely not about vendor giveaways. It is about affordable, governed token access.
Governed access, meaning there are strict rules and limits.
Correct. The proposal is to build neutral pools of computational resources, funded by a mix of government cash, in-kind compute donations from tech companies, and human capacity. The goal is to ensure that a university student in the Global South or an open source maintainer doing critical security triage can experiment and build on the absolute cutting edge without being financially priced out. It treats compute as critical global infrastructure, like electricity or water, rather than just a luxury good for Silicon Valley.
So what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? Whether you're prepping for a board meeting, leading a software team, or you're just insanely curious about where the world is heading. The core takeaway from Paris is that you have to actively architect your own synergy with AI.
Absolutely.
You cannot just accept the magic answer from a black box chatbot. You need to demand runnable artifacts code or outputs you actually own and can inspect. You need to verify your systems using cryptographic proof, not just a vendor's promise. And most importantly, for your own mind, you have to embrace the friction of learning.
Yeah, if we distill all 6.5 hours of that intense debate down to its essence, it comes to this. Trust is a mechanism that must be engineered into the stack. It cannot simply be declared. Cognitive friction, in the context of learning and critical thinking, is a vital feature, not a bug. And openness, the ability to inspect, translate, and control our tools from the models down to the silicon, must be aggressively defended at every single layer.
And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, building on what we've discussed today. If this massive shift into the agentic era means that the entire junior pipeline of an engineering or creative career is being eliminated, if entry-level work is no longer doing the raw, friction-filled work yourself, but simply evaluating the output of an autonomous AI agent, how will the next generation ever build that intuitive, silent know-how needed to eventually become a senior expert?
That's the real question.
Think back to our pilot metaphor at the start. If you only ever learn to monitor the autopilot and you never feel the physical resistance of the yoke in a crosswind, if you never learn to play the instrument yourself, how can you ever expect to become the conductor of the orchestra?